Hare Krishna. Thank you all for giving me this opportunity to speak for my own purification. I seek the blessings of all the exalted devotees here before I can say anything, and it's quite ironic that you're asking me to speak, but nonetheless I'll do this as a service. Thank you. Okay, so we're reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 verse 34. So very interesting verse, and I've never seen a verse with the first line as the whole one word. So this is nice. So we'll try and follow along. And indriyas yendriya yas yarthe Ragadvesho vavastitho Tayornavasam agachet Tahoi asya paripantino Indriyasya of the senses. Indriyasya arthe in the sense objects. Raga, attachment. Dvesho, also detachment. Vyavastitho, put under regulations. Tayo, of them. Na, never. Vasam, control. Agachet, one should come. To, those. He, certainly. Asya, his. Paripantino, stumbling blocks. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who are in Krishna consciousness are naturally reluctant to engage in material sense gratification. But those who are not in such consciousness should follow the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures. Unrestricted sense enjoyment is the cause of material engagement. But one who follows the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures does not become entangled by the sense objects. For example, sex enjoyment is a necessity for the conditioned soul, and sex enjoyment is allowed under the license of marriage ties. According to scriptural injunctions, one is forbidden to engage in sex relationships with any woman other than one's wife. All other women are to be considered as one's mother. But in spite of such injunctions, a man is still inclined to have sex relationships with other women. These propensities are to be curbed. Otherwise, there will be stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. As long as the material body is there, the necessities of the material body are allowed, but under rules and regulations. And yet, we should not rely upon the control of such allowances. One has to follow those rules and regulations, unattached to them, because practice of sense gratification under regulations may also lead one to go astray, as much as there is always the chance of an accident even on the royal roads. Although they may be very carefully maintained, no one can guarantee that there will be no danger even on the safest road. The sense enjoyment spirit has been current a very long time, owing to material association. Therefore, in spite of regulated sense enjoyment, there is every chance of falling down. Therefore, any attachment for regulated sense enjoyment must also be avoided by all means. But attachment to Krishna consciousness, or acting always in the loving service of Krishna, detaches one from all kinds of sensory activities. Therefore, no one should try to be detached from Krishna consciousness at any stage of life. The whole purpose of detachment from all kinds of sense attachment is ultimately to become situated on the platform of Krishna consciousness. I'll repeat the translation once more. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. Hare Krishna. So, a very interesting verse. A few points struck me when I read this. The first was that there are these senses and there are these sense objects. And it seems there is a very strong attachment or inclination for the senses to enjoy the sense objects. And Prabhupada refers to one particular one in this purport, which is object of sex desire. Now, the question came about in my mind is, where did this desire come from? And what seems to be prevalent throughout this is that it's a constant activity of the living entity in this material world, and that every time a living entity comes to the material world, it again tries to enjoy in the same way that it's tried to enjoy in the past. So in many ways, whatever we're doing now is just a reinforced activity that we've practiced many lifetimes. So it's not something new. And our problem is that every time we encounter something that we want to enjoy in the material world, we think that this is something new. And here Prabhupada talks about this sex desire, and all of us have this challenge to overcome. When we look around in the world, we may look around and see other people, and we consider them to be goddesses of fortune, or perhaps we consider them to be handsome princes in some way, whatever our situation may be. But the reality is that what we're seeing is that people like us are suffering from lust and envy. And this goes on lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. We try and engage in this same activity again and again. There's actually a beautiful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Prahlad Maharaj speaks. And I wanted to read that to you because I think it's very relevant to our discussion here. The verse is 7th canto, verse 5, chapter 5, verse 30. The famous verse that Prabhupada often quoted. There's one line in particular which is Prahlad Maharaj describes everything that we do in the material world as chewing the chewed. It's the same activity again and again, somehow trying to draw more taste from it the next time. So let's read that together. So this is the translation. This is when Prahlad Maharaj is asked by his father a particular question, and this is Prahlad's response. Because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. So this notion of chewing the chewed comes up again and again, and this is kind of what's being described here in part by Prabhupada's purport here. And this description of Prahlad Maharaj is interesting because that describes the manifesto of the material world. Everything that we do is to increase the attachments that we have to increase all the aversions that we have, and to try and consider how we can increase our taking part in these activities, the sense activities. Now, in the material world, we often see that people who have a particular birth, a particular situation or an environment, they may consider themselves in a very comfortable and privileged position. But the description of the Vedic understanding is that no matter who you are, we're subject to these conditionings, these sense conditionings that we've developed over lifetimes and reinforced over lifetimes. So actually, if you look at the material world and whatever level one is born in or one situation they're in, whatever situation you're in, it's actually weakness that is our birthright. We don't have the inclination to uphold principles that are being described here in the Bhagavad Gita by a natural conditioning. So we have to develop these. So what we see is that people in the Kali Yuga, people like us, we are in fact, we're prone to compromise. And this particular verse is talking about how we shouldn't compromise in any situation. And even though we have license to enjoy our senses to a certain degree within the Vedas, as is described here, one can enjoy sex enjoyment, sex life within the license of marriage. Actually, to be caught up in that principle can also lead to one's fall down. And Prabhupada talks about this with an analogy, which is that of the royal roads. So in London, there are many nice roads, which are particularly reserved for the Queen and any of the royal family. They're beautifully kept. Nobody else can use them. They're the nicest roads ever. But Prabhupada's talking about the danger here, that you can have an accident even on such roads. So even though there may be regulation within spiritual life for enjoying certain things, we should be careful of the allowance of the regulation and not taking it too far, because even then we can get caught up in it. I wanted to share a story actually. I was listening to a class to prepare, and Kadamakanan Swami was talking about when he was a brahmachari, and in that time he was living in Amsterdam temple, and he had the service of doing the laundry for the whole temple. So you can imagine all the brahmacharis with all of their clothes, and he would have to take that out every morning to the laundry. And he had a big load, I mean, it was a big pile of clothes every day before he went on to the streets to do Harinam and books. So when he was going, he described himself in this way, and it's quite interesting. He had a big pile, and literally it was like a big pile of clothes with 2 feet walking underneath. It was such a big pile of clothes. He couldn't see anything in Amsterdam because he was just carrying this big burden and going to the laundromat. And then when he dropped off the clothes, he had given everything to the laundry, and now he was free. And we know what Amsterdam is famous for. You know, the very sensual displays in the windows which talk about the very things that we're trying to control in this verse. And everything was very alluring and very captivating for him. So he kind of gave an understanding from that, that one of the keys of us developing strength in spiritual life is always to remain connected to some kind of service which absorbs us. So in that way, just like he was, you know, carrying the big burden, he didn't have any energy or he didn't have any capacity to even look around and try and enjoy himself. But as soon as he let go of that service and he walked away, he was now free to see anything he wanted to, and he was, you know, able to take part in looking at these things and so forth. So he was describing how this is a simple thing that we can try and do. The senses need to be engaged. It's not a question of whether they should be or not. They will be by nature. We just have to choose the motivation we have behind whatever we engage our senses in. So I was thinking of this this principle of, essentially we have this one choice. we can literally choose between serving our senses and continuing to deepen our material illusion. Or on the other hand, we can try and serve Krishna's senses. And in that way, we are able to become more enlightened and more aloof from the material world, despite being connected to it in the various ways that we have to serve in it. And it's literally this choice that we have between the two things. We can either choose Maya or Krishna. And it's interesting because I remember one class I was listening to with Radhanath Swami described how this moment-to-moment choice that we have, it strengthens or reinforces whatever choice we've made in the past. So if we chose Maya previously, the next time choosing Maya becomes that much easier. And if we choose Krishna, then the next time that choice of choosing Krishna becomes that much easier. So we have a choice. And it's this moment-to-moment choice is that is what makes up our Krishna consciousness. So there are many senses, and there are many things that we can engage the senses in. From the Gita, we know that there are five senses called the karmendriyas, or I'll describe them: the speech, the hands, the legs, the sexual organs, and the organs which get rid of all of our unwanted things. So these are the five senses responsible for bodily functions and movements. Then there's the gyanendriyas, which talk about the eyes, our ability to see, the ears, how we can hear, the nose, we can smell, the tongue, we can taste, and the skin, where we can touch. And in so many ways, there are five other senses which are more subtle even. Finally, it comes to the point where it explains that the controller of all of these is the mind. The mind is considered the king of all the senses. So it's therefore the Gita which deals with how we can learn to control the mind, which is in fact the key to controlling all the senses. So in this verse, what we come to understand is that this manashastani indriyani, the mind, is very powerful, and it is responsible for helping us on our journey, or perhaps taking us further away from our goal. In this way, Krishna describes how the mind can be like a friend or an enemy. And our practice of Krishna consciousness is helping us deal with our mind in such a way whereby the mind can become more of a friend or can become more of an enemy. A question that came up for me was, how does attachment and aversion, how are they connected? Because it talks about both of them here. Now, whatever we're attached to and whatever we're averse to are very much basically the same thing. Attachment and aversion are two sides of the same coin. It's based on some kind of desire that we want to enjoy, that we've enjoyed in the past. And if something gets in the way of that, we don't like it. We're averse to it. But it's based on a negative attachment. It's the same attachment. And then there are things that we actively pursue, which are positive attachments. So negative and positive attachments make up attachments and aversions, which is what is described in this verse. And we don't really have a choice whether we can become attached to something or not. We always have to be attached to something. Just like we always have to act, we can never stop acting. So in that way, what we can learn to see through the knowledge of the scriptures, such as the Bhagavad Gita, is that there are things that help us and there are things that don't help us in order to connect to Krishna. And so, I was remembering one story of how one of my friends, a mother and a daughter, had somebody in their family, the mother's son, who was not a devotee. And they were very concerned. They were saying, you know, how, you know, they were very attracted to Krishna consciousness, but they couldn't see how their son could become attached or become connected even. And I remember we spoke about it, and I said, what is your son like? And they described certain foods that he liked. And in this way, you know, they were very very fond or fondly describing how he liked to eat certain things. So I said, okay, so if that's the case, why don't we make a plan to make those things for him? But before you give it to him, you make sure you offer it to Krishna and make a very humble prayer that, Krishna, if it is your desire, then please let this prasad have a positive effect on this individual. And they did this for 6 months. 6 months later, I saw him at the temple, shaved up, dhoti, tilak, you know, dancing in the kirtans. And he was a musician before. And he brought that, you know, that connection that he had with music to Krishna consciousness. And he's an amazing kirtaniya now. And I saw this transformation of how when we connect the senses to the sense objects, but we bring Krishna into the picture, then actually anybody through any means can become connected to Krishna. And that was something I saw in 6 months. You know, we all have that capacity to help ourselves, help other people, and it only takes 6 months. So that very strong inclination that we've developed over lifetimes can be connected to Krishna, and it can allow for us to become purified, no matter what our condition may be. Another thing that came up in this verse was that, in effect, based on our enjoying propensity, sex life is very, very captivating in the material world. It's what makes the world go round, as we know. If you look at any form of advertising, any media, there's always a strong, strong use of the energy of sex to convince people that this is something they need to buy. Now, what we see is that the practice that Srila Prabhupada gave us was that we can counteract this in a very simple way. Prabhupada gave us a very magical program, and all of you are engaged in this every day, I know, where he talked about the morning program. This is one of the struggles living in Grihastha Ashram, waking up early. And from my own experience, whenever there's a good practice of waking up early, it makes everything in spiritual life conducive. Everything fits in, everything has a natural time and place, and you have a whole day of service that's possible. When that program is not there, then everything else somehow has to be squeezed in. And then how much service can you do, because you've still got rounds left, and you know, you haven't read anything, you haven't heard anything, and in such a way, your whole day is in effect wasted, because you're just catching up on whatever you're trying to do that you would have done in the morning. So one of the things I was thinking of on a practical note of how we can not get caught up in the stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization is to follow the program that Srila Prabhupada has given us with the morning program. And I'm saying this as not somebody who's practicing this, so please forgive me if I'm speaking to all of you who are. But just for my own understanding, the importance of chanting in the morning and chanting in the association of devotees, to have the association of Guru and Gauranga, is so paramount to our spiritual life. I remember talking to Gaur Gopal Prabhu, and he was describing one time that the secret or the key is to fix up all of your rounds before you start your day. And in that way, actually, everything becomes possible. There's time for everything. And Krishna is especially kind towards those devotees because he allows for them to have enough time to do all they need to do after the morning program is done. And if you don't, as I know from my own experience, then it's a constant struggle. So I was thinking that actually, whilst there is license for sense enjoyment, even in Krishna consciousness, unless we practice that which makes our consciousness permeated with Krishna, then there is no hope of us becoming even conscious. Yet, what to speak of Krishna conscious? We have to become conscious first. And the best way that we can become conscious is to have a strong connection to Krishna every day. There was something I wanted to share, actually. Something that I shared, on a group that I'm part of, and it's something that His Holiness Satchidananda Swami shared. And I think this is very appropriate and apt for all of us to consider. He said something about putting together an inspiration list. So he said that this list is something that he puts together every day. And, you know, we can consider how we can do this as well. He said, every day I make a list, either written or in my mind, which has helped me to move forward in times of struggle. When I don't feel inspired, looking at this list has made a great difference. And he goes, I hope this little inventory of what's important helps you to make your own list as well. If you don't already have your own personal inspiration list, please feel free to use this. So let me go through these 9 points. The inspiration list by Satchidananda Swami. Number one, chant with absorption, knowing that Krishna listens to the voice of our chanting. He listens to the intention of our chanting. Number two, relish the Srimad Bhagavatam every day and share what struck you with others. In other words, have sangha, have association. Number three, let go of your fear and surrender by conscientiously choosing small acts of pleasure for the Lord. You build a strong bridge of surrender that eventually brings us to Him. Small things that we can do every day. Number four, listen to the saints, the gurus in our tradition every day. Number five, this is important. Choose good friends and dare to talk to them with things that are usually silent, that you're usually silent about. In other words, how we can cultivate a spirit of sharing and growing together and revealing our hearts. Number six, don't become attached. Remain clear. This is what this verse is talking about, having clarity despite having license for sense enjoyment. You are a citizen of the spiritual world and you're only staying here for a short time in the guest house of the material world. Number seven, know that in giving and not taking, the real treasures of life are coming. Number eight, learn to think thoughts that give you energy, that inspire you, that nourish you. And equally, the things which don't nourish you and don't inspire you, don't spend more time talking about them. And number nine, find that small spark in your heart and then act out of love rather than duty. So try and make it a feeling of love in your service rather than just doing to get it done. So it's very very inspirational, and hence the name, the inspiration list. So he says that he does this to remind him, and we know Satchidananda Swami is always reminded of Krishna, so this is just for our own purification. So for us, I think looking at this verse, realistically, if we read it, we understand that the senses are very strong. And, you know, the word in Sanskrit is balabhadra, or very, very strong. And on our own, we can't necessarily deal with them. Finally, what we have to try and do is we have to make a plan of how we can become, and we all have our own particular conditioned nature that we have to deal with. So we have to make our own plan as to how we can make ourselves more Krishna conscious. And what that ultimately means is that we have to engage in good association and regularly chant and read Prabhupada's books. And finally, learn to take shelter of Krishna through the process of devotional service. I wanted to share one story with you. When Prabhupada was on a morning walk in Venice Beach in America, he, as he often went on a morning walk, he would expound on certain principles of Krishna consciousness during these morning walks. And on this particular morning walk, he was with many of his disciples, and they were on a beach. So there were these little crabs that would come from the water onto the beach. And one of his early disciples, I forgot his name, maybe somebody can remind me. He's, Prabhupada would often say he's very, very stout and very stocky. Do you remember his name? Brahmananda Prabhu, yes, Brahmananda Prabhu. So Brahmananda Prabhu was very big personality. And Prabhupada asked him to catch one of these little crabs. And Brahmananda Prabhu is so big and the crab is so small. And he tried many times. You know, he would lunge at this crab and miss. And the crab would run along. And after some time of trying to catch one particular crab, the crab went into the ocean. And then Prabhupada saw that Brahmananda was, you know, exasperated and anxious for not having completed his mission. And then Prabhupada said, "So, what is our understanding?" And they all looked at him like, you know, we should try harder. maybe we should have more people arranged in certain ways, you know. So he said, actually... He goes, we are so small, and Maya is so strong, like, you know, Brahmananda Prabhu. But if we take shelter of Krishna, the ocean-like mercy of Krishna, then nobody can harm us. Maya cannot harm us. He gave such a simple analogy, and it's so profound. And immediately we can understand what we need to do. If we are struggling with our battle with Maya, as we all are, all of us have that struggle. We have to see how we can make our life one that we can take shelter of Krishna in the ocean of mercy that Krishna allows us to dive into. And if we are able to do that in some small way, as Sachinanda Swami described in this list of inspiration, then actually there is no harm that can come upon us, and we can actually become Krishna conscious very, very quickly. And we are sheltered and protected despite the many challenges that we may face on a day-to-day basis. So, I think that's all I wanted to share. If you have any questions, I will do my best to answer them. Otherwise, I will revert to other devotees in the audience. But if you have any questions, please feel free. Or any corrections. Hare Krishna.
So, what are the strongest methods or ways to go into the ocean?
Yeah. So, the Nectar of Devotion describes five angas of devotional service. Does somebody want to share what those are? The five angas of devotional service. Sorry? Yes, chanting. Where would we be without chanting? Yes. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Residing in the Holy Dham, yeah. Two more? Sadhu Sangha, yeah. One more? Yes, worshipping the deity. So, any of these five angas are particularly helpful for the aspiring devotee. And we've seen actually many devotees, just by focusing on one of them, become very absorbed in their Krishna consciousness. One thing I remember reading and hearing about was that all of the angas of devotional service are supported by chanting. And as we know, the Yuga Dharma is the congregational chanting of the holy name. And I like to remember how Ayanda Prabhu used to quote that chanting Nam Japa is like taking an injection every day, and it supports kirtan, Nam Kirtan, or congregational chanting. So the quality of our chanting on beads supports and enforces the quality of our kirtan, and the quality of our kirtan supports and enforces our japa. So it's a circular interaction that takes place. So any of these five limbs of devotional service supported by chanting are a very effective means by which we can become absorbed in Krishna consciousness or dive into the ocean. Thank you. Okay. I think, sorry.
I don't have a question, just more of a comment.
Sure, please.
Thank you so much for this lecture. It was very clear, instructive, very logical, and very practical as well. So I just wanted to thank you for that. That's all.